Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Kate. Welcome to What You Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. How are you doing? And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm doing so good. I'm so excited to chat with you. I've been reading your books. I'm like so like fangirling right now. I love this. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have been a writer most of my life. I am the daughter of a jazz musician and a librarian. So twin passions for music and books growing up. I actually ended up majoring as a voice major, studying opera when I was in college at Boston University, but I was always writing books on the side. And it's around the time I had graduated from grad school, I ended up landing my first literary agent for the novel that would eventually become Mistress of Rome, which was my very first novel. So fast forward about 10 years, I have written 4 books set in ancient Rome, 2 books set in Renaissance Italy, and now I have written my 3rd book set in the 21st century. That particular trilogy, or not exactly a trilogy, they're all standalones, but that began with the Alice Network, then it was The Huntress, and then now my upcoming book, The Rose Code.
Mm-hmm. I love this. And so did you always want to do historical fiction, or did you dabble into some contemporary, you know, in your some other time, or was it always historical fiction for you?
Well, my mother had in addition to being a librarian, also had a degree in ancient and medieval history. So I was getting stories about the past, you know, Alexander the Great crossing the Alexander the Great and, you know, the Gordian Knot, or Caesar crossing the Rubicon, or, you know, Princess Elizabeth and the Tower of London. These were the stories I got instead of fairy tales. So I gravitated naturally toward the past as soon as I began to tell stories of my own. I did a little bit of dabbling here and there with other types of books. And even though these are books, mysteries, sci-fi, YA, this is stuff I love to read when it's well done. When I tried it myself, it really just proved I should stick to my strengths. So those are just experimental trunk novels that are never going to come out from under the bed. And I have learned really that historical fiction is what I love to write most. And that is what I tend to stay in, as it's a bit my comfort zone, the past.
I love this. And so what's the research process like for you to, do you get inspired by a moment, a time, an event or something, and then just start working the story? Or was it something the story comes in and you start researching, you know, if it happened or is there some facts of truth?
I think for any writer, it's going to be a matter of finding a hook. And that hook can be almost anything. For me, it's generally speaking a historical time or event or a historical person. Any one of these things can give me some sort of flashbulb moment that will make me think, aha, there's a story here, or I know I can hang a story on it. So that tends to be what I look for. I'll look for something that sort of ignites that flashbulb in my head and makes me want to find out more. And then I go down the rabbit hole. And that's the point at which I read as broadly as I can and as deeply as I can, try to find out everything I can. And it's that point when you realize, you know, you all have all this information coming in and you realize how much of it can you use in your story? What are you going to have to leave out? And then after a while, you sort of start carving the story away from that big, you know, mass of material that history will give you.
I love this. And so let's talk about the Alice Network, which was picked by Reese's book. It was an early pick in the Reese's Book Club pick. What was the process like finding out that it was picked up and then, you know, all the cahoon, you know, that happens with it once it gets picked up?
Well, I had no idea it was going to her, and I'm sure I had known, I would have thought, well, there's no chance she'll ever read it. So it was a complete surprise to me. And I only found out when I was in the TSA line traveling from a flight in Canada back to the US after a book event. And you probably could hear my shriek all the way back in, you know, my home city. And I'm really surprised I wasn't yanked out of the TSA line for a pat down. What I found out, though, since it was very early days and, you know, very different from the sort of process they have now, is that she had posted a story on Instagram asking her, you know, followers, which book should I take on my 4th of July vacation? And she had three books laid out. One of them was The Alice Network, and there was a 24-hour voting period. So I had exactly 20 minutes before my flight took off and to get onto the very, very sketchy, unreliable airport Wi-Fi, throw up a few posts, and basically beg every person I'd ever met since birth to vote for me on Instagram and on various other social media. And then I hopped on a plane, went cross country. Everything was delayed. My luggage was lost. I didn't get in until something like 4 in the morning. And by the time I crashed, went to bed, and then woke up the next day, I woke up to find out my book had won the runoff. So I was I was just absolutely, you know, thrilled, over the moon. And, you know, the way that it blew up was a wonderful thing to see. And I did get to meet Reese herself because we did a Facebook Live together talking about the book. And that was a tremendously cool experience. Not just meeting her, my TBR list grew a foot talking to her because it was very clear very quickly that she is a real, real reader. It is not just a, you know, a celebrity puff piece kind of thing just to pose with a book on Instagram. She's a big reader. And it was also wonderful to meet her book club team, the Hello Sunshine team, which is this fantastically diverse, enthusiastic crowd of ladies and some gentlemen as well, who are so committed to finding women's stories and promoting them. And I'm so proud to be part of it. I've been so thrilled to see every month the new authors who are brought in and to read their stories. So really, it has just been a wonderful, wonderful experience all around.
Oh my gosh, it's a wonderful experience. I think I found you through her book club pick. I was like, early days, I was like, let me see what I should read. And so I picked The Alice Network, and I was fascinated. Like, I read some historical fiction, but not a lot. And so once I read that, then I read The Huntress and then Rose Code, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I found an author that I love. Like, I get a story that I can dive into. And it just unravels and just goes with the process. So I'm grateful that you were picked. I'm grateful that new audience found you and that you keep writing. So,
well, I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. Really delights me.
Awesome. So let's talk about the Rose Code. So it's a code breakers, and there's some cameos, there's a little bit of everything. So talk to us about what was the source of inspiration for us.
Well, I've always been fascinated by Bletchley Park ever since I first heard about it. And that fascination deepened when I read the wonderful novel by Robert Harris called Enigma, which is about the code breakers of Bletchley Park and about the Enigma codes which they crack. And it led me to go deeper into the history on my own. And what I did just interested me more. You know, Bletchley Park is a very remote country manor in the middle of absolute nowhere in Buckinghamshire. And that is where the best and the brightest minds in Britain were recruited and brought and trained to break the supposedly unbreakable Axis military codes. Mm-hmm. And they succeeded so spectacularly that some historians actually estimate they may have shortened the war by up to 2 years and millions mm-hmm. of lives. So the Germans and the Italians never knew that literally this group of men and women in the middle of the countryside were reading their mail and their battle plans. And that just fascinated me right from the start. And even more so was my discovery that, you know, by the end of the war, not only was the code breaking operation, this massive intelligence factory that, you know, employed thousands of people, but many of them were women. In fact, about, I think, 3/4 were women by the time you got to the end of the war. And I hadn't read much about the women of Bletchley Park. So I wanted to write a novel, not just about the whole code breaking operation, but also about specifically the ladies. Mm-hmm. And so I have three women who are somewhat fictionalized, but very much based in their achievements on real women. And they are recruited from very different walks of life all across Britain and brought to Bletchley Park. And they become friends in a situation where normally in the ordinary course of life, they would never have even crossed paths, but they cross paths now. They become friends. They all have a critical part to play in the intelligence operation at Bletchley Park. And, you know, also not just during the war, but after the war, as they realize they have to come together again to break one last code and to catch a traitor who was operating at the park during the war.
I love this. And so I love that you feature female and war, like you feature strong female stories as opposed to other, you know, stories. So, and you mentioned that you feature different social classes and different walks of life and they all come together. I think that's like a really unique aspect of it. You also work with the timeline that is like, it happens during the war in 1947. What was the process like to write dual timelines, you know?
All of my books since the Alice Network have been dual timelines. And that is something that, generally speaking, I tend to write going back and forth between the two timelines. I find it easier to cut back and forth rather than to write each one out individually and only then do the splicing. And that's because I like to tease out parallels between the timelines, you know, as I go. And that's a little easier to do if I go back and forth as I'm writing. But for the Rose Code, I did write much more of the war timeline A to Z as I first, because so much of the book is more about what happens during the war. And then later on, I realized a little bit more about what the 1947 timeline was really going to entail. And that turns out it entails the post-war mystery as it unravels. And it all takes place in the rundown to in the last 10 days before the royal wedding of Princess Elizabeth and then Prince Philip of Greece. And so it all takes place against the backdrop of this royal wedding and it's approaching, you know, celebrations. And that just added a little bit of fun for my, and a little bit of complications too for my heroines as they are beating the clock to break their last code.
I love this. And so let's talk about the royals, because they do feature, we see Prince Philip in the story. And we have some cameos about the royal wedding. Like, so was it intentional to bring this part of the storyline, the royal family, into this book, or was it something you just wanted to add on to just add more flavor?
Well, it really, the history gave it to me. It was already there. And I'm not sure I would have included this, except for the fact that when I was doing my research about the Bletchley Park women, I was absolutely stunned to find that Prince Philip, in the days before Queen Elizabeth was his girlfriend, or, you know, even remotely seen as being a possible future wife, he was dating a Canadian-born debutante named Ozla Benning. And Ozla happened to work as a translator at Bletchley Park. She was his wartime girlfriend. It was really quite a serious relationship. And there are these, you know, really quite adorable stories about how, you know, she would take the train from Bletchley, come on into London on her days off. They would hit the town and like dance all night. And then he would literally put her on the milk train to get back to Bletchley in time to make her shift. And I thought that was fascinating that this prince was dating a code breaker. Now, did he know that? Because the secrecy they were operating under was very, very severe. And she would have been told, no, you do not tell your boyfriend what you're doing on your work time. But it was still such a great connection. I couldn't resist it. And so Ozla is one of my three heroines of the Rose Code. I did fictionalize her just slightly to differentiate her from the real woman, but the broad strokes of her life are very much the same as they are in the Rose Code and as they are in real life. She was, you know, this effervescent, beautiful ex-debutante who knew everybody in London, was related to everybody in London. She had a Canadian father and was an heiress and was bilingual. And she met Prince Philip, introduced by a friend. He, by that point, was, you know, he was not an important royal by any means. He was just sort of a penniless Greek prince who was, much more importantly in his own mind, a midshipman in the British Royal Navy who was very keen to prove himself to his adopted homeland and to defend England against the Nazis. And this is especially a sensitive subject for him because several of his sisters had married Germans who were part of the Nazi party and were on the other side. So he was keen to prove his loyalty. He thought of himself as an Englishman. He was a absolutely gorgeous, dashing young man. And he and Ozla bonded over these similarly very privileged, but at the same time, very lonely childhoods that they had had. And so this relationship was really quite serious and it was right there in history. And as soon as I realized that was already there, I couldn't stop but think I have to include this because it's too good to leave out. So that's why the connection with Philip, and that is why he appears in the book as a small character, and that's why there are, you know, a variety of royal connections. Although his is not the only royal connection at Bletchley Park. One of the things I did find very interesting was that Kate Middleton's grandmother, mm-hmm. Valerie Glassborough, was also recruited to work at Bletchley Park, and I couldn't help but include her in a small cameo as well.
I love these royal little tidbits. As someone who's like fascinated by royal weddings and royal family, I'm like, anytime you bring it in, bring some of the history about it, it's just like adds a little notch to the book. So tell me, what are you working next? What can we expect from you?
Well, The Rose Code comes out on March 9th, and I have literally only now just finished another, what is going to be my next novel, which I have been writing over about the last 4 months. And before that, doing another probably 4 months of research and outlining and reading and so forth. But my next novel is at least tentatively titled The Diamond Eye. And that is another World War II story. It is about Lyudmila Pavlichenko. She was a Russian girl, a history student, a budding historian, a library research assistant, who, when the Germans invaded her home, decided she would join the army, and she became a sniper. And in fact, she became the most deadly female sniper of all time. She fought against the Nazis and had a tally of 309. And if that wasn't enough to make her a truly jaw-dropping possible heroine for a novel, she then came to the United States on a goodwill tour in 1942, became BFFs with Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh my God.
And literally became America's sweetheart on a speaking tour all around the United States before going home and going back to the Red Army and her duties there. So I could not believe that no one had written about this woman in a novel before this. And so I couldn't wait to write about her. And I don't know when this book will be put out. We don't have a publication date yet. I've only just finished my first draft, but I can't wait to talk more about it as, you know, these details settle up.
I love this. Oh my gosh, I'm fascinated. So again, another strong female protagonist, you know? So I love this. So what has it been like to write during the pandemic? Is it different doing it now before the shutdown, or has it just been the same?
Outwardly, things have been very much the same for me, and I'm very lucky for that. I am lucky enough that I already work from home, and my daily schedule has not changed very much, except for the fact that I can no longer go to the gym, have not in a year, and I have to do my working out from YouTube videos at home, and that, you know, it's harder to see my family, and that I do so much less traveling for things like conferences or for speaking engagements or for other writing-related author book events. So I don't get to travel as much, and I don't get to go to the gym, but otherwise my daily routine is very much the same. But on the other hand, some things have been very difficult. It's not just me, but pretty much any writer I know has confessed that it has been very hard to focus at times. Mm-hmm. I feel like I had the attention span of a goldfish there for about the first 6 months. And fortunately, at that point, I was just in the editing rounds for The Rose Code. So I wasn't drafting a new novel, which I think would have been terrifying looking at that blank page. But I was just involved in the editing rounds, and I plowed through those more by determination than through any sense of pleasure, but, you know, it's still a job, has to be done. And then sometime around the middle of last year, I started to think about this new novel about Lyudmila Pavlichenko, and that was hard to get that going. So I used that time to do a lot more outlining than I usually do a lot more research up front than I usually do before I start to draft. And ironically, by the time I started to draft in October, I was suddenly, the words were flowing like nothing I've ever heard before. And I loved that because I think it was escapism, mm-hmm. pure and simple. I think the escapism of trying to get away from daily life and get into another historical setting really had me absolutely raring to go. So I have felt very lucky that, you know, the writing has been a little bit of a refuge at this time.
I love this. Yeah, I think it's something unique from the pandemic. For me, it's been an escape. Like reading has been an escape to try. Like, and I have to, I can do some contemporaries, but I have to go to historical or to even paranormal just to get myself like be in a different world. Like, I don't want to be right now in the pandemic. So it's understandable. Like, it's great that it's been an escape. Like the birds flew and you were able to just be in a different world for a few months.
I really do think that the escapism of reading has been one of those things that has certainly kept me sane. And I think it's keeping a lot of people sane in this time, and not just, you know, being able to turn on Netflix and, you know, binge away, but also being able to escape into books. And I think many people are relying on books right now. And certainly I am. And it's wonderful sometimes to just be able to dive into that different world and know that, you know, everything's going to be all right by the last page.
Yes. So what has been a book you read this past year or last year or a couple of years, I don't know, that you can't stop gushing about?
Well, I have read a lot of great books last year. And honestly, the trend I think is about to continue for this year, because I read two books that I really can't stop thinking about just since January 1st of this year. And one of those is The Children's Blizzard by Melanie Benjamin, which is the most fantastic, you know, sort of historical ticking time bomb where you have a historic blizzard that came down on a whole group of characters on the American frontier. And you have no idea who's going to live, who's going to die, and what the fallout is going to be. And it was just absolutely sensational writing. I can't stop thinking about it. And then the other one, which I just finished, is Sadika Johnson's Yellow Wife, which was just incredibly moving. It has the story of a young enslaved woman in the years before the Civil War who ends up at the infamous Devil's Half Acre, and where slaves are sold, and ends up staying there. And it was so incredibly moving, and it was a piece of history I did not know much about, and I feel very privileged to have had that deep dive into something that, you know, is an ugly part of American history, but really needs to be remembered. So these are two books I can't stop thinking about this year. And so I really can't wait to keep on reading and see what else the year brings me.
I love these. I'm adding these to my TBR. So tell us where we can find you online.
Oh, you can find me at my author page, Kate Quinn Author on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, Kate Quinn Author. You can find me on Instagram, Kate Quinn 5975. And I generally am always to be found in social media if I'm blowing off my word count or procrastinating. You can also find me at my website. It's just katequinnauthor.com. And I have links there for all of my books on pretty much all vendors if you want to check out anything that I've written.
I love this. Thank you, Kate, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATYOURREAD10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.